It will not go live. But now we could make it live anytime, all right?
Okay.
So I went through the book. Go ahead.
No, talk about how the book was different, how to begin, the benefits of it, you know, the number of people that are packing, how to prepare, you know, types of hike, best hike, and, types of gear, and closing by reiterating that nature is a gateway.
Right. Well, I will do all that. I'll do it, of course, my way. So let me tell you what more or less the what I took from this. Remember, I do this. Free walkers. Yeah, my listeners know. Free walkers. It sounds astonishing to some people, but we walk 50 miles in one day. And
you did. Wow.
We do it all the time, but a real hike, we'll do 30. So, and I'm going to be 70. So this is not new to me. But nevertheless, your book is fantastic. And the things that I took from it that we'll talk about include creating your timeline, the physical conditioning that's important for us in our when we're a little older. I love the idea of just first don't get hurt. Gear, which is a big mystery to people. Gear is a big mystery. That took me a good year.
I will simplify it.
Yeah, to get it right. It took me a year to get it right. You know,
right?
A year and a lot of money to get it right. So this book would have been a huge help to me. Then, of course, I love the idea of mindfulness. It is a mindfulness thing. So I think we need to talk about the whole person, your concept of the whole person, and the other thing that I do want to talk about, not just safety, but technology. What technology you recommend on the road? Because sometimes you can't get a signal. And that's the only problem that I have with all this in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that. And the last is, if we have time, because I'm the only one who has this problem in the whole world. I am one of the 4,000 people. It's true. I'm one of the 4,000 people in America that is left-right dyslexic, completely dyslexic. It's like reading, but it's not reading. It's physical. My right side thinks it's my left side. So there is no way that I can do what you say in the book, which is the orientating part. I can't read a compass. If it tells me to go one direction, I will go in the other. So I really want to know what's going on, if I could retrain my brain, what should I do? Because my big thing is I can't go alone. If we have time for that, we'll talk about that. But I only want to bring it out because I want people to know that even with this big disability, which, by the way, it is a disability, you can do it. You can do it. So it's always like, you can do it.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
And although I'm talking to you a lot now, believe it or not, I don't talk much on the radio. I'll give you a chance to answer all the questions. Okay?
Okay. I'll try to be succinct, and you can nudge me along in the appropriate ways, but this is great. I can't say that enough.
Right. Be succinct because I have a lot to ask you, as you can see. The other thing is, at the end of each segment, you're going to hear some music. And it should be that I'm already talking. But should you hear the music, just finish your sentence, because what that's going to mean is it's going to stop to go into the commercial. So if you happen to talk over the music, don't worry. The engineer will be able to pad down the music. But the more you stop, you won't get cut off. Okay? All right. We are ready, Stu.
Okay.
We're ready to rock and roll.
Oh, boy.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And excitement reigns today. Now, for about 4 years, you've been hearing me brag that I can walk 30 to 50 miles in a day. No one believes me. It's absolutely true. I am a member of something called Free Walkers, and I have to tell you that when I first started, I was able to do 3.4 minutes on a treadmill. So that's how you can build yourself up. But I never saw a real guide to being able to do that. It was all on my own, and boy, did I make mistakes. But today I have the guide for you. His name is James Klopovic, and he is the author, along with his daughter Nicole, of The Honest Backpacker. Now, you know, this is the fountain of truth. So this is The Honest Backpacker, a practical guide for the rookie adventurer over 50. And the point here is, know thyself. Now, I want to get into this. I want you to know in detail how you can really change your life and become an adventurer. So you're not just looking out the window at somebody else that appears to be having a good time, and why are you on the couch? James is going to help us, and I'm going to start right away, James, with this wonderful book, The Honest Backpacker. What was the motivation for you to write it?
Well, about 15 years ago, when I started getting into backpacking after being and still a lifelong lover of nature, started doing the research about backpacking and found out that there was no real reference for the novice hiker, especially the older hiker. So I decided to put together a book that was practical and talked about the process of hiking. It is a process, not only left foot, right foot, but there is a way to go about it. And I also wanted to talk about how to get more from life, as nature is that avenue to better health. You grow as an interesting person, and you maintain your zest for life. I tried to make it practical, humorous, and it tells tales from the trail, and it's an easy read.
Yeah, and you know what? It's dead accurate, too. And I think that because I had to do this with a group called Free Walkers, I had my guide on my side. But most people have to do it from scratch, and honestly, I don't think it would ever have happened to me if it didn't. So let's get down to the bones of it. You have a really specific protocol, and I've learned by trial and error that this is the right protocol. So if those of you who would really like to be adventurers, it doesn't always have to be Nepal, you know. We do rail trails along the Delaware. They're flat, but they're long, and they're marvelous. So let's talk first about timeline. I think it was one of the most important things that you bring out in the book. Tell us about timeline.
I have in the book the timeline because after a couple of careers in logistics, I found that there's nothing like a plan. This is the general direction of how you need to prepare. One of the many advantages of it is it is your own. You can add, delete, modify. You can bring somebody else in. And another advantage is you can see your hike taking place physically. You build towards the end. When you finish the last to-do item, you know you're ready to be, you have some confidence to get on the trail safely, make memories, meet new people who become friends, and want to do it again. Many advantages to that timeline.
Yeah, and you know, if you're a marathoner, you can actually go on the marathon website, and they'll give you that timeline, how to prepare, how to do that. But if you're a backpacker, this is it. This is exactly the way you should be training for this and making it happen in your life, and you get that very clearly. You go to Amazon, you can go to your bookstore. We'll give you some websites in a minute, but it's The Honest Backpacker, a practical guide for the rookie adventurer over 50, by the Klopovics, which is K-L-O-P-O-V-I-C. And they are people who've really done it, not just write about it. So let's talk about really done it. Physical conditioning. People think, oh, I must be like an Amazon person. But let me tell you, my experience, James, has been that my strong suit, because I'm no athlete, in fact, I got detention because I wouldn't go to gym when I was a kid, is that I have stamina. The one thing I found that you need for this that people don't talk about is stamina. How do you recommend, and it's very clear in the book again, how do you recommend people train for this physically, from the physical point of view?
From the physical point of view, if I could backtrack, Adrian, I talk about the whole person concept of conditioning, which includes the body, the mind, and the spirit. Now, specific to your question in getting your body ready, you start with diet and exercise, the elixir of health. but you do it sanely and appropriately. Diet, you just have a couple of words to live by, like no refined sugar, no refined fat, no trans fats, but not on the exercise. An important thing to remember for older hikers is don't get hurt. So an appropriate exercise is to work on your stability, mobility, flexibility, and endurance. And you do that with a variety of exercises under the guidance, hopefully, of a good conditioning coach. And you start gradually. That's a big deal. This is about a lifestyle change, not necessarily just getting ready for hiking, because getting ready for hiking is an introduction to a better way of life.
I can't emphasize too much. You know, everybody knows I'm a narcissist. I'm extremely vain. I've never met a mirror that I had to look. This keeps you very buff. It really does. I have no athletic ability. But because I'm walking all the time and I'm using sticks, I do use sticks. It even tones up the upper body, not just the lower body. So this is something that in and of itself makes you healthier. It builds on yourself. But you're absolutely right. In the book, it unpacks certain things, like interval training. And I think that's important. Aerobic training is not the only thing here. Weight training is also extremely important. But again, in incremental bites, so that you're not stressing your body. And as James says, first don't get hurt. But let's go to the nutritional part. You named the big three, which you have in your book, but you also talk about eating small meals. Let's talk a little bit about eating small meals and eating on the road.
Yes. Eating small meals actually goes back to the primal days. We were hunter-gatherers. We foraged. So we just repeat that, but it's all with the eye and eye towards sensibility. So you start out with a balanced meal in the morning, which would have a good proportion of carbs, of fats, and the third one escapes me here. And you put those three together for each of the meals. Now, for a snack, it could be as much as a piece of fruit mid-morning. I like to have a little snack before I work out. Lunch would be the same thing, balanced. And then another snack in the afternoon. Again, it would be fruit, perhaps a little cottage cheese. And then in the evening, have the combination, the three-part combination there to balance it out, but don't eat heavy. Try not to eat before you go to bed, and you'll find that you learn to eat well. For example, an idea is learn to shop around the edges of a grocery store, because that's where you'll find the foods that that grow in the earth and not walk on it, and learn to read labels.
Now, one of the reasons that you didn't mention protein is he's not a meat eater, this guy. And I told my kids I'm a fishitarian, but they laughed. They said, "No, Mom, you're a pescatarian." I said, "Well, no, I'm from Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, you're a fishitarian." But the fact is that there is light protein here, beans and fish. And you know what? It's everything you know you're supposed to eat. And if you do that, it works. I have to give you, though, James, one disappointment I had. I think it's a big deal. To 30 to 50 miles. I can't believe I do it. So I thought I was going to lose a ton of weight. But the truth is, you lose about 300 calories an hour when you're just plain walking. That's not true of hiking and hard walking, but it's only 300 calories. So don't get too excited that the pounds are going to fall off you and you can eat anything you want. You cannot. You eat right, as you'll learn in The Backpacker. And so you have to... if you have to take donuts on the road, it's not gonna work for you. Even though psychologically you think, oh, the pounds must be rushing off, it's not true. That was my one disappointment. We're speaking with James Klopovic. He is the Honest Backpacker, author, a practical guide for the rookie adventurer over 50. Now we're gonna take a little bit of a break. We're gonna come back, and we're gonna go from body to mind. I think that one of the major themes, let's say, running through the book, is the idea that you're a whole person. Is the idea of mindfulness, is the idea that getting into the woods, into the wild, seeing nature, makes not only makes you change, but the people around you are different. or at least you're relating to them in a very different way. And that's the excitement of it. I mean, we started our show talking about what you need to do. And I don't want it to sound onerous, but it's a commitment. Why would you bother, actually, to make such a commitment? Well, we'll tell you in just a moment how this can change your life. Don't you go anywhere.
I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Okay, so Now you see how it goes, right?
Yes, I'm sorry I bobbled the trilogy there. That's a big deal in the book.
Not a problem. We made it into something that is in the book, which is how you deal with protein.
I'm a fish and chicken kind of guy, and I do try to balance it. If I could say that I weigh about 2 pounds more than I did when I was 26, this stuff works, Adrian.
I know it does. It really does. I actually was a heavy person, and I'm not.
Mm.
And so I have a whole other story to tell, but I don't want to make it for me. This is for everybody.
Right.
But in the next part of our show, I want to talk about the mindfulness part of it. And I know that you can just run with that, so I don't have any problem. Now, is there a website other than Amazon and all the online? Do you have a separate website?
Yeah. It's my website, honestbackpacker.com, and then you can get it through your local bookstore and through Amazon, and then I have distribution through BookBaby and Barnes & Noble, so it's out there in all the outlets.
Good. So I'm going to have you say that to everybody. That'll be at the beginning. Now, we're going to go on in a minute, but I want you to remember, if you send me a blog article, if you send me a photo of yourself on the road, if you send me, if you're allowed, a little excerpt from the book, whatever you're allowed or you have handy, I'll put you in the blog, okay? And then you can
Sure.
The blog too, or whatever you want to do. So that's up to you. We'll put it right in there. And
I'll do it. I need to know where to send all that, so I guess I send it to your email.
Yeah, that's all going to go to you. Yeah, send it to email. And since you're going to be on the cover of the website, the homepage, if you send a picture of the cover of your book, we can also put that on the front page. So I always ask everybody if they have any article lying around. I'd love to post it to the blog. And if they have a picture of the cover of their book, I'll put it on the front page of the homepage.
Okay, all of that can be done. Mm-hmm.
And everything that you've been corresponding is the same correspondence. It goes right to the producer. Okay?
Okay.
All right, Stuart, we are ready to rock and roll.
One thing real quick. About this mindfulness, I get into the art of the walk.
Hold on a second. No, we're talking for 1 minute. Go ahead. You get into the art.
I get into the art of the walk. Because by the time you put together your footfalls with the pacing of your poles, with your breath, you're doing meditation. It is very mindful. So I'll get off on that if you want me to.
I do. All right, Stu, now we're all ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. Once again, this is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And we're here with an author of a book that is very close to my heart. It is called The Honest Backpacker, A Practical Guide for the Rookie Adventurer Over 50. It's written by a father and daughter team, James Klopovic, who's with us now, and his daughter, Nicole. Before we go any further, you can get this book almost anywhere, James, and you also have your own website. So tell everybody where they can get the book and the website that you've created for it.
Yes. First, start out with the website, honestbackpacker.com, and you can order the book from Amazon. That's print and ebook. and they are available through your local bookstore also. It's just about wherever you go for a book, you can find Honest Backpacker.
And let me tell you, we were talking about nutrition, physicality, the fact that it ends up in a wonderful timeline where you have made your plan. And it sounds like, gee, this is a commitment. This is a lot of work. Do I really want to do this? Well, if it was just to lose weight or if it was just to look good even, no, that's not enough. There's honestly a higher purpose to this. And I want to throw this to James now as he talks about mindfulness, nature, what it really does for you on a whole other level, way past physicality. Go ahead, James.
Yes. I talk about nature as it has been my experience as the gateway to a better life. Yes, you will get in shape. Yes, you will become a far more interesting person. But then in the end, you will re-energize or gather about you a zest for life. And a way that I can explain that is when you get out on the trail, I encourage you to think about the art of the walk. The art of the walk is when your footfalls match the pacing of your pulls, match your breathing. I personally like to breathe in with 3 steps and breathe out with 3 steps. What happens is it's a very meditative routine. You become mindful on the trail. And by being in nature, you're about as far away from the stressors of the day that you can get. And oh, the things that you will realize. Insights, you know, the appreciating nature, things that you would wish to do and resolve to do. So nature brings that about. And I do hope that if you do take your iPhone, you will at least turn it off when you do this.
Actually, we're going to talk about technology and safety in a minute, but I have to bring this out because there's no way to show this on television. There's no way to explain this on radio. People say, how do you walk 30 miles or 50 miles? Let me explain to you. Sometimes I don't know I've done it. I will look up and raise my consciousness to what I'm around and realize that I've been meditating maybe for 5 miles. And I'm 5 miles further down my track. It's perfectly safe. I know where I am. It's not like driving in a car, which we all have a mind lapse sometimes, and we wonder, we get scared sometimes. We wake up in the car. We haven't been asleep, but, you know, that could be dangerous. This isn't. This is just what James is talking about, this meditative state you get into. And miles just float away. And when you become more conscious of the now, you end up with insights that you never have had before. And this is across the board. Everybody will tell you this. This isn't just two kookaboos, James and Adrian, coming up with this stuff. Everybody will tell you this, right? But let's talk a minute, though, about safety. I worry about it. I explain to James, I don't know my left from my right. There's fancy words from it, but I really don't. So you give wonderful hints and tips in the book about being safe. And what do you think about the technology, the best kind of technology to have with you when you're on the trails?
Well, the first thing is to be able to stay in contact. And I'm talking about the longer hike. And usually on these longer hikes, take the Appalachian Trail, for example, you're pretty much connected all along the way, connected in two ways. If you conserve your battery, you will have phone connection, but you're very close to towns along the way, which you'll use for resupply. So at the very minimum, you can take an iPhone, but turn it off to conserve your battery. When you go to town, fire it back up again. A lot of people also like to take a little iPod for music. Again, you have to worry about charging it and carrying an extra battery. That's extra weight, but it is very convenient. Some people even take a pocket recorder to record all the insights that they have. That's another thing, too. While this diverges from the technology, do take something to take notes with. You will have realizations and insights that you're going to want to remember and repeat to other people. So at least start out with the iPhone, but conserve it. There's all sorts of things that you can use with that. Get used to using, for example, the GPS that it has and so forth. So that's it.
And that is it, because one of the things James tells you in big letters, 35 pounds, no more. So let's talk a minute while we have about 2 minutes of time. What is your favorite gear? Yeah, give us a little bit about the gear.
Right. Start simply. And you build, as with most physical endeavors of sports and so forth, you build from the ground up. Start with shoes. You will want to have shoes that are durable, light, and keep you as dry as possible. You can either have tennis shoes or leather-bound shoes. Move further up the body, and you want to start out with perhaps a good fanny pack. As the name implies, it's very light, fits on your hips. You can carry water, a snack, maybe a first aid kit. Going further up, get a good set of poles and learn to walk with them. I like to say, walk with them until you can have a conversation with your poles. And then continuing up the body, get a good broad-brimmed hat. Those four pieces of basic equipment, and you're hiking. From there, you will gain you'll gain experience and information on how to build on that without spending too much extra money. That's how I would start.
Now, if you're really going to do this, whether it's a hiking or a walking that you have in your future, in a group or alone, look at the book because it will save you hundreds of dollars, honestly, in getting the wrong stuff and getting too much stuff. Also, socks that wick, underwear that wick. It's really worth it because you're going to sweat, folks. And don't say fanny pack in England. Both James and I went on one of the coastal walks, and fanny means something different to them than it does to us. So don't use that word because they looked at me in horror when I... Yeah. So we have been talking with James Klopovic, the Honest Backpacker, a practical guide for the rookie adventurer over 50. Honestbackpacker.com is where you want to go. Amazon is where you want to go. Look, do this. And by the way, one of the things that would horrify James is if you just read the book on your couch and that was it, and then you never used it. No! Use it. Get out there. Make it happen. Thank you so much for being with us today, James.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, when we come back, we're going to go, 360 degrees. We're going to talk about your rights as a patient. Remember, this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. For those of you who want to know more about this book, by the way, go to generationboldradio.com, and you're going to be able to not only listen live on Sunday, your local
you
station, but we'll archive it. So, patient's rights on your mind, don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay,
Adrian?
Wasn't that nice? Painless, right?
Well, thank you. I bobbled that one. That's embarrassing because I live by that trilogy.
Okay, no problem. I thought the whole thing was smooth as silk.
That is reassuring. Thank you. I hope there is so much to talk about. My thing is just saying it succinctly, and thank you for your support. What an affirmation that all of this work is going to improve and change some lives. You know, and
if I
had a little longer, I'd talk about legacy and bringing up the next generation. You know, on and on. You know, we boomers are going to show people how to do retirement.
Oh, that is true. I have a new blog coming up, and we're for a big magazine. It's called Bottom Line Personal. It's not my blog.
Right.
I'm blogging for them, and we're trying to figure out the name of the blog. And we're having trouble because if I say successful aging, it turns everybody off because they think aging is a dirty word. And I really love it. I really love it. So I don't know. We're working on it. But don't forget to send stuff in, and this is a great interview. You have to hang up. My next guest is on.
Okay.
And I know it's one of many interviews you'll be doing.
Let's hike together. Stay in contact. I'd love to hike with you.
Where are you located?
I'm in the Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know it well. All right. Wonderful. Take care.
Okay.
And we'll talk again.
Let's hike. Thank you so much, Adrian. Okay, bye-bye. Yeah.
Is Dr. Kirsten Haywood on?
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Adrian. It's Kirsty Haywood. Good morning.
It's Kirsty, not Kirsten.
Not Kirsten.
Oh. Okay, well, you like Kirsty, right? Kirsty Haywood?
Yes, please, if that's okay. Thank you, yes. Thank
Beautiful.
You.
Beautiful. And where are you speaking to me from?
Well, I'm currently in Philadelphia. I'm attending.
Right.
I'm a participant or delegate of the International Society for Quality of Life Research Conference, but I'm actually from the University of Warwick in England.
Wonderful. Okay. I'm an Anglophile, and that's a long story, a long sad story, because
really
I live in I live in Tewksbury, New Jersey, which is the sister city of Tewksbury, near.
My godmother lived in Tewksbury, so I knew Tewksbury very well, Tewksbury Abbey.
Isn't that funny? Because their mayor comes to us, and our mayor goes to them, and it's all a very, very nice thing. And this morning
It's beautiful. This morning I was.
I'm speaking on aging in Harrogate in August coming up at the Gilbert Sullivan Festival.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So you must go to Betty's in Harrogate and have a fat.
I know Betty's very well. I've put on many a pound at Betty's.
Indeed.
In fact, you know, there's a garden there. Now the name of the garden is escaping me. You could walk to it when you go in the park.
Yeah. Yes,
I know
Harrogate. Yeah, I know Harrogate well. I live. Yeah, sorry.
Here. Yeah, you know well. I see what's happening. Go ahead. We have a little bit of a delay, so we're stepping on each other. We'll work that out for the show itself. But I apologize. Finish what you were saying.
No, I just said I know Harrogate quite well because I lived not far from Harrogate when I was first married. So I know Harrogate quite well. So you're telling a story about Betty?
Yeah, the reason I was mentioning that garden is that Betty's has a concession stand there as well.
Right.
As in the town. So it does, the walk does me absolutely no good in terms of losing weight. So we are going to, the way this is going to go is we have two fairly long sessions,
okay,
around 9 minutes at least each. The only thing to watch for is at the end of each session, there's music. And
okay,
if you're talking, just stop talking. Usually I'm on already, and I'm not letting you do that. But if you do hear music, just finish your sentence. Because what happens, that means that the commercials are coming and you'll get cut off, right?
Okay.
Now, the things I want to talk about, I'll do a lot of talking now, but on the show, it's mostly you, right? So, I want to talk about the International Society for Quality of Life Research and what it is, and I'm going to ask you that first, all right?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to ask you to unpack this concept of patient engagement, what it means. And our whole thing here, the show, is taking charge of your own life. So I'm more, the emphasis to me is on the patient.
Yeah.
What should the patient be doing, right? What should the listener be doing to engage in their own healthcare, basically, and with health professionals? Hints and tips for that. Okay.
Okay.
And then we'll have a lot more. That's only the first part of the show. Then after the music, we'll talk a little bit more about what you would like to get out. Now, is there any website you want to send people to?
I guess the first website to send people to would be the ISIGWAL website. Colleen, what's the website for the, is it ISIGWAL.org? Okay.
Okay, so that I have here. So I will just say that myself. Okay.
And another one that I could refer people to is the PCORI website too, which I think is PCORI.org, isn't it? PCORI.org, yeah. And probably a third one in the UK is involve.org.
Right, so I'm going to do the one, and I'm going to toss it to you for the other two when the time comes. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Stuart, we are ready. Somebody else is online. I can hear him. I know who it's probably somebody. You have something? Somebody on the line, Dr. Haywood? I just heard it.
Do I have somebody on the line? I don't think I have anybody else on the line.
No.
No.
Oh, it's gone. All right, we're good. We took care of it. We are ready to rock and roll.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a
And hello, hello, hello once again, and we are going into the second half of our show. It's Running Away With Us. This is Adrian Berg. This is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And, of course, we always have the best in experts. Experts you could never, ever access in any other way but this show, and I'm very, very proud of this. And one of those experts is Dr. Kirsty Haywood. She's in Philadelphia right now at a very special conference. I wonder if you know that there's such a thing as the International Society for Quality of Life Research. Well, Dr. Haywood certainly knows it, and she is presenting to professionals something called the Good Practice Guidance for Patient Engagement in Research. And so what we're going to be talking about today is, what is this International Society for Quality of Life Research? Where can you find information about it? How does it affect you? What is patient engagement? And what can you do to make yourself more involved in your own self-care? These are the kinds of things that you need to know if you're really going to age successfully and enjoy that retirement that we have been looking forward to. So thank you, Dr. Haywood, for being with us. And let's unpack this right away. Tell us a little bit about the organization, the International Society for Quality of Life Research.
Good morning, Adrian, and thank you very much for the opportunity to come and talk to you and to share all about ISOQOL and the patient engagement activities that we're undertaking. So ISOQOL is the International Society for Quality of Life Research. It was established in 1993, and it's a non-profit society focused on health-related quality of life and patient-centered outcomes. And the goal of the society is to enhance the quality of healthcare and to promote the health of people worldwide. The two main focus points for enhancing quality of life are patient-reported outcomes, but also patient engagement. And ISOQOL provides a premier opportunity for people in quality of life fields to connect, network, and to reach goals. And I guess a few years ago, we started to really get a much better sense of how important really listening to patients is and really getting a sense of how they can inform and help us to understand better what quality of life is. And so in seeking to engage more fully with patients as partners in this research process, we, ISOQOL, supported the first patient engagement scholars. So in 2014, we actually started to engage with patients as partners of coming along and joining in with the conference. So it wasn't just focused on clinicians and health professionals and researchers, but we're actually really seeking to get the patient's voice well and truly embedded within the society. So the kind of research and activities that we're undertaking really do have a strong focus on what matters to patients and keeping patients very much at the heart of the kind of research that we're undertaking.
You know, I'm fascinated by this, and I'm frustrated by it too. I'm going to say that this really is a collaboration. Healthcare should be a collaboration between the professionals and the patients, and it's the collaborative effort that you're identifying here. But from my point of view, from the point of view of Generation Bold, where I say, get out there, kids, and make it happen, we're very involved with having people take charge of their own lives. And I'm going to be blunt about this. I see women who engage in the healthcare system very proactive, ready to tell their story, ready to listen, and ready to really talk to their professionals. And I see men stonewall it. I honestly wonder if your research shows that there's a difference in the way men and women engage in later life when they have some kind of physical issue, and whether there has to be a different protocol and a different mindset of the health professional when it comes to gender. I know you're not supposed to say that. It's not politically correct. But boy, empirically, I see it everywhere. Does it show up at all in the research?
I think you raised several very, very important points, Adrian. And I think what I'd like to speak to is how we would wish to work collaboratively with patients as partners in the research process. So some of the questions you raise about whether or not men are more as engaged as women, what we would hope to do early on in the research process is to get various stakeholders on board, so men and women, involved in defining the research questions and really helping us to understand how we can better engage with all different stakeholders in the research process. So the diversity issues that you raise are clearly really important, and gender is just one of those issues. And I think you're absolutely right in that if we work in isolation, we as clinicians and health professionals working often in our ivory towers have a very different sense of how we should or could engage or seek to reach out to different members of the populations. But actually, if we invite different members of those key populations reflect that diversity and invite them to be an active member of the research team, so they sit with us at the same table, we have transparency in the way in which we work together, and we seek to not only define the key priorities that are really important, not just to health professionals, but to members of those different populations, define those research questions and really work together on the best way in which we conduct the research so that we can seek to engage more fully, then what we hope to achieve is much better quality research that really has relevance to the lives and well-being of the people that we serve with our healthcare.
And, you know, I wish this to be the case because I honestly do believe that what we bring to the table as patients is extremely important. And we also feel that there's a psychological benefit when the doctor, the healthcare professional, even the home health worker, doesn't have to be a super skilled individual, but they're working with us from a healthcare point of view. When they get us, it's very simple. It all boils down to the healthcare professional gets us, and we're willing to share. So, but what I hear from doctors, and this is mostly doctors, but I bet it's the same. I don't know if you are facing this reality, is the issue of time. I don't know one doctor that doesn't complain that they don't have enough time with their patients because of the constraints of insurance and how much time they can spend and just the practicalities of the business. Does this at all come up in terms of how to improve patient engagement, how much time we have, and how to maximize that time?
I think that's a really good point that certainly researchers within ISOQOL are really trying to address with the use of patient-reported outcome measures. So patient-reported outcome measures are questionnaires that seek to better understand how patients feel, what they can and cannot do, how they live their lives. But if we develop those measures in collaboration with patients so that they co-produce the information and have these questionnaires at hand that provide really relevant information to the health professional and to the patient, they can really enhance that communication and that engagement during that those kind of consultations with health professionals, but also support shared decision-making. Now, early on in the kind of idea of integrating PROMs into routine practice, there was this fear that it was just going to add another barrier or be really time-consuming. But actually, the evidence suggests that it doesn't increase the time of the consultation, but it actually enhances the quality of the consultation so that patients are able to better communicate the things that really matter to them, and that information is received more readily in many ways by the clinicians so that together patients can work together with their health professional to really work out a plan of action together and a plan of action that really addresses what matters to patients. And I guess that looks at engagement in two different ways. It's engagement in a way that allows patients to work more closely together with their health professionals to really drive towards the things that really matter. But from a research perspective, we are working together with patients as active partners in that research process to really hone the kind of questions that we think are, or patients say are important. So, for example, in their consultation with a clinician, it could be, you know, I really don't feel that I'm getting my point across, and how can we make that better? Or we wish to work together with patients in that process to hone the research question, but hone it in a way that has direct applicability to their real-life experiences.
And, you know, this is a terrific breakthrough. You know, we're speaking with Christy Hayward, Dr. Hayward. We're talking about the International Society for Quality of Life Research. And in the minute we have left, there are a few wonderful websites that you need to send people to if they really care about the involvement of their healthcare professionals and how they could see what's happening in this enormously important trend. Just give us a couple of the websites that they could look at.
Certainly. If people are really interested in getting involved in research projects and helping to inform the way in which that research is undertaken and ensuring that the patient's voice is embedded throughout that process, certainly in the U.S., a group that I could refer people to is the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. And this is the only U.S. funder who requires meaningful involvement of patients and other end users in research that it funds. So if you're really interested in really making your voice heard clearly throughout that research initiative, narrative and the way in which it then impacts upon the way in which healthcare is undertaken, I would urge you to go to PCORI.org and seek to identify ways in which you can become more involved. From a UK perspective, but of course you can access this information on Involve.org. And Involve is a leading organisation in the UK that has really sought to define the way in which we can engage more fully with members of the public and patients in working together as partners to co-produce and co-deliver research that really addresses the issues that matter most to people who live in their day-to-day lives with these key challenges.
All right, now we're going to give you a couple of more resources for yourself, but this is the way. You can no longer complain that the system has nothing to do with you. You have something to do with it. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
For my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, so this is really very, very good. I do want to give them the one other website, and it's the ISOQUOL.org, and I will do that for them, okay, when we come
back.
Thank you. Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about here is, are you looking for people who are interested in, who are patients, who want to be involved with the research or surveys or anything like that? Is that something that people can go and apply to be part of, or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, so I guess what we're talking about with patient engagement, it's on a different level to the more traditional way of thinking about how patients get involved in research. And traditionally, it was very much patients were seen as participants in research. And of course, we still want people to participate in research, and that might involve completing a questionnaire or taking part in a clinical trial. But the engagement that we're talking about at ISOQUOL is the level at which people become more involved as active members of that research team. And it can be different levels of engagement there. So it may be that you just wish to be involved in a focus group meeting or a group meeting where you can help to share your experiences, some of the challenges and issues that you might have with your own health or healthcare. Or you actually might want to become far more involved in the whole research process. And again, that can be seen on different levels. You can be working hand-in-hand with the research team. And some good examples in elderly research is where we've witnessed patients, older people working together as co-interviewers. So they actually go along and they interview.
Wow.
And the evidence would suggest that where you have older people interviewing older people, you get much richer data.
Oh,
straight.
I want you to say, because we have to go back on the air in a minute,
okay,
and this is just what you're going to be saying, right?
Okay.
And
okay,
whatever you were going to say now, don't lose it because we're going to say it. And what else would you like me to bring out? We have a nice amount of time, and we definitely can spend the whole time just on that. But if there's any other points that you would like to bring out, I will ask you.
Okay. I think one of the big challenges that as health professionals we have is how to get started, and that might be the same perspective from patients. I'm really interested to be engaged, but what do I do? So I guess it's providing a suggested avenue to go to patient advocacy groups or research organizations and to air your interest.
Good. And do you have an example in your mind of one of the most successful research endeavors that you might want to describe in addition to the elder that you just described?
Ooh, golly.
Or for you, what you personally learned, that anything that surprised you from the research that's going on?
I think a classic example of where the voice of the patient has been so strong is perhaps in rheumatology, where historically we focused very much on the importance of understanding pain and stiffness. But when we actually started to talk to patients, it was, yes, they are important issues, but the overwhelming factor in their life was fatigue. And historically, it was a concept that we missed. And now we're starting to recognize that when you talk to patients, they raise very different values, very different priorities for how they would look at a good outcome and define a good outcome. So I think it's just an example of highlighting where we really should why we should talk to patients and seek to understand their perspective.
Okay. We're going to go on now in a minute, but on a very personal aside, my son, who's very young, has had rheumatoid arthritis from his 20s.
Okay.
And they say that it might go away, actually, with him, but he is medication. But you're absolutely right. It was all the fatigue. It was all about the fatigue.
Yeah.
And and that's that. So,
yeah.
This is important stuff. All right,
absolutely.
Stuart, we are ready
Thank
to
you.
Rock and roll.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. I am so proud of this show. You know, everybody knows I'm a narcissist and very vain. No, I'm not proud of me. I'm proud of the show. Because there's no place else that the guests can come on that you would never meet, and you can be a part of it. And how do you do that? You go to generationboldradio.com. You see, it'll say, Ask Adrian. And then you can not only ask me a question, that's great, I'll get it to any of my guests who are the experts or myself, but more importantly, tell me what you want to hear about. Tell me who you would like to be on this show. We have a very, very wide reach. Probably there's no one you can name that I can't get to in some way to spend a few minutes with us together every single week. So it is your show. And one of the things that you talked about and complained about, let's face it, is patient engagement, which is a fancy way for saying that some of you think that you're not part of your own healthcare process. Well, not so. Dr. Kirsty Hayward is here. She's talking to us about the International Society for Quality of Life Research. It's just a new way of looking at patient engagement. She's going to explain how you could be part of it in a moment. She's explaining it right now at an important conference in Philadelphia with healthcare professionals. She's presenting good practice guidance for patient engagement in research. So let's talk about that. There is a website you can go to. You may never have heard of the society. You should know about it. The website is isoqol.org. isoqol.org. And as always, on our website, we'll have this website, we'll have others that Dr. Hayward already gave us on the show, where if you want to get involved in this kind of research as not the professional, but the patient, how much respect and actually how much clout you'll have. So explain to us, Dr. Hayward, the difference between this kind of research with patients and what we may think of as a patient study.
Certainly, and they are really important distinctions to make. I think historically people have been involved in research as participants in the research, so invited to complete a survey, invited to take part in interviews or focus groups, or to take part in a clinical trial, for example. And whilst they are still really important parts of the research process that we, of course, always encourage people if they can and they feel so inclined to take part in, that you know we always need participants. But increasingly it's recognized that often research is conducted in a way that doesn't work best for patients, so perhaps questionnaires are not that user-friendly or trials are not developed in a way that actually means that it's easy for patients to take part in them. And so increasingly we recognize that by working together with patients as partners, so active partners in the process where they become research collaborators and we recognize the experience-based evidence, experience-based experts in many ways is how we think about patients as partners in the research process. This is where we think about patient engagement. The definition of patient engagement is where patients are active collaborators in the research process. So they are invited to sit at the research table with the clinicians, the health professional, the health professionals and the research methodologists to really help us to think more differently about the way in which we would frame a research question so it really has relevance to the patients and the end users of the research, as it were, but not only in helping us to think about the research question, but perhaps working hand in hand in the way in which we define the way in which the research will be undertaken. And increasingly, we have patients working together as co-producers of that research. So, for example, some great examples research with older people where they work together as interviewers. So they come along and they interview participants in the research, then work together to analyze that data and to refine the themes and to help to co-produce the message that comes out of that research. And we found that that can be an incredibly useful way of getting much better quality data.
Sure, because people are relating to people who are like them. They are
Absolutely.
Older. They are talking to people who are older, and they're much more forthcoming. I think that's important. We talked at the first part of the show about demographics, whether men and women and maybe people of different ethnicities relate differently to their healthcare providers, and it would make a lot of sense to get. I look at it almost as cultural competency here. What's the cultural competency that the healthcare professional or researcher has with who their patient really is? You know, so I think that that's an important one, and I'm just wondering if you've come across a research project that has surprised you or that you think is top of the line. You know, what's lighting you up these days in addition to just this new concept of how it's done?
Okay, so I guess a really good groundbreaking example of where patients made such a difference is in the world of rheumatology. And there's a group called OMERACT, Outcome Measures in Rheumatology. And they work to develop core outcome sets for clinical trials. And a core outcome set is trying to get some consistency in the way in which we measure outcomes across clinical trials. So that it's, for example, when you're comparing trials together, you're comparing the same measures, as it were. And historically, that decision had been very much driven by clinicians and health economists and members of the pharmaceutical industry, and the focus had been on pain and stiffness and maybe reduced range of movement. And, of course, they are important issues. But when we then started to talk to patients to say, so what do you think about this? What's really important to you? They were important, but what patients really rated as the most important outcome, a good outcome would look like, would be a reduction in their fatigue. And that was something that historically had been very much neglected, perhaps because we didn't know how to ask about it or indeed what to do about it. So the whole fatigue agenda has become huge in recent years, and that has been very much driven by the importance of recognizing the patient's view and the patient's perspective and giving a credibility and legitimacy to that experiential learning, experiential knowledge. And I think more recently some work that I've been personally involved in is with cardiac arrest research and resuscitation research, and recognizing that historically we've just not asked survivors of cardiac arrest how they are. So that judgment has been very much driven by the perspective of clinicians, and working together with patients as partners in this process, so not just as participants in the research process, but sitting with survivors and their advocates and their family members and partners at the same table, really starting to define and to understand actually survival is of course the most important outcome if you've had a cardiac arrest.
Right.
But what happens
but
after
what?
Survival?
Yeah, exactly. The question, right?
Exactly. And often people are, you know, nothing happens. You survive, you've got a pulse, that's great. But actually we really need to be exploring more fully with survivors and their family members how their life is affected and the challenges that they have moving forward. And we only seek to understand that better when we engage with patients fully. And of course we mentioned those diversity issues earlier, but there are challenges there with regards to the complexities of their health and well-being once they survive a cardiac arrest, that we really need that fineness of understanding that comes from talking to survivors and their family members.
Well, this is terrific, and this is a new perspective for all of us. And as we get to the end of the show, just remind everybody, it's your life and your world. So get out there, kids, and make it happen. Perfect.
Thank
what timing.
You.
That's timing for the book. All right, so you know that you can send us, this is important, we really want to pep up our blog, and so we're asking every guest, if you have an article, even if it's for professionals, even if it's technical, we don't expect you to rewrite it for the layman, we will post it, and the same contact information that you've been using all this time is where it would go.
Okay.
You'll will be on the front page of our website on Wednesday, and then the whole thing is archived. So if there's anything, the blog is separate. We'll post that on our blog. But if there's any picture, if there's any, you know, website that you want us to put in there as we describe what the show is about, just make sure you got it to us, and that will be posted on Wednesday. The show
right.
is heard Saturday night and Sunday on different stations in the country.
Okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time, Adrienne, and for the opportunity to really raise the profile of what we're doing and the
sure,
challenge.
Sure, it's wonderful. And if you want to share this on your social media,
yeah.
Anybody who goes to BizTalk, it's a free
BizTalk.
App.
Okay.
BIZTALK.
Yeah.
They can listen live. In Philadelphia, it would be 10 o'clock in the morning this Sunday.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.